Hey folks, and welcome to the podcast. Our guest today is Ron Sexsmith. He came by 11 a.m. sharp this morning at Studio A in Jersey City at WFMU Studios, him and his wife and one of his publicity folks, and just sweet, sweet guy, very interesting guy, very unique guy, uniquely talented, just great to sit, you know, 8 feet away from him and chat and just watch him do his thing on the guitar. You know, there was no complex sound check or mixing board or anything like that. It's just two mics near him, so it's not the highest sort of fidelity recording, but I think it sounds good, and I think just his performance comes through loud and clear, and he's in the middle of a huge tour, as we say a few times during this, so I do recommend you see him if he comes anywhere near you. Just a super interesting guy. Always appreciate my podcast listeners, and stay in touch. I do hear from some people who listen only on podcasts, and it's very interesting, totally different sort of audience than the radio show listeners. And I do want to point out that this program, the whole, after he left, there was a long set, sort of a best of his career. So the first hour of today's show was all Ron Sexsmith, some on record and some live. You can find it over at WFMU.org/Michael. Of course, archives of all my past shows there. Well, at least to the year 2000. Ron was on the show in 96, so we didn't start archiving until about the year 2000. But I wish I had. I do have that cassette tape somewhere of him on the show in 1996, but I cannot find it. Or at least it's in my basement. One of these days, it will surface, and I'll put it on the podcast. Anyways, keep in touch. Thanks for listening. Here it is, me and live conversation and performance by Ron Sexsmith. Morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. As I reminded you, you were on the show 1996, a long time ago, like for both of us.
Yeah.
A lot of miles under the bridge. How was, you were sort of talking about this, how was the City Winery last night?
I think it was good. I was just, I was saying backstage, I was a bit nervous, but that's not unusual. And people seemed to enjoy it. I hope they did. I think I played well enough.
But you've been doing this since, I mean, when did you play your first gig in front of paying people?
Oh, man. I would have been 17 in my hometown of St. Catharines played. I had a residency at this place called the Lion's Tavern, just doing cover songs and for drunks and stuff like that. And it was good, good education.
For tips or for money?
I was getting paid. I had to do four sets a night, $35 a night. And then I started packing them in at a pretty early age. I think because I was so young, I had this sort of, enthusiasm or something. People were coming out to see me. And so if it went from 35 and then I was getting 59, then I was getting, So I remember I was making money for like Christmas presents and stuff like that because I was still living at home,
Yeah, four sets a night. I know that you know a million covers. I remember that from seeing you live a few times and just from last time you were here. Age 17. So was this just something that at a young age, just kind of, you were able, not everyone can do a million, 4 hours of covers with just them.
Well, that was the start of it, though, because
but did you know that you had some special little thing?
No, I didn't. I don't think I did, actually, because, my older brother was playing the same bar before I was, and he said, if you're going to play, you're going to have to play, all the usual suspects, like Neil Young and Creedence and all this. So I borrowed his records, and I just learned a bunch of songs, and then people would come every week and say, hey, can you learn this one for next week? And sometimes they'd even buy me the record and say, hey, go home and learn this. And I was just really eager to please, and a bit of a kind of performing monkey. And when I wasn't on stage, because I was underage, I had to go sit in a room by myself, and then they bring me out to play again. But after a while, they sort of slacked off on that, and then they would even be sneaking me drinks and all that. But no, it was good education, but I was terrible. Like, my voice, I was blowing my voice out every night, like, just from not singing correctly. And so I sounded just like the Cookie Monster most of the time,
And is that, when did you start to add original songs into that mix?
I was trying to, even back then, but my original songs were terrible, and so they wouldn't go over, you know, and then I would try to sneak one in, and then around the time when I started writing, when I was a little older after my son was born, I started writing some stuff that I thought was pretty good. It still wouldn't go over, you know, so I just realized I kind of worn out my welcome by this point, and I had to move to Toronto, because in Toronto, they don't want to hear covers, they want to hear originals, and in my hometown, and it's probably still this way, they just want, you know, to hear the Beatles and everyone, and but I'm really glad I went through that, because, I mean, yeah, it was this weird kind of Beatlemania feeling I had for a little bit in my little hometown. I was getting invited to parties and all this stuff, you know. And, yeah, it was good for my self-esteem.
Yeah, and here we are 17 albums later. The new album's called The Vivian Line. Could you play us a song from this brand new record? What's it called?
This one is called What I Had in Mind, and I was just messing around with the tuning. Hopefully it's okay. I just put new strings on yesterday, but anyway.
You can stop and retune. We're patient.
I think it's good. All right. I've always seen school days through September eyes. Could never concentrate, never memorize all the blackboard figures and facts. How I fell behind for dreams and schemes and visions of summertime. It was what I had in mind. My mark could find no ways in my report card news. Hoped it was just a phase I was going through. Does not apply himself, I would hear. Could never fall in line with the slave all day for minimum pay design. Wasn't what I had in mind. I could never see the relevance of the intelligence of preaching gloom and doom. Nor could I address the elephant in the room. Now that's what I had in mind. I could never see the relevance of the intelligence of preaching gloom and doom. Nor could I address the elephant in the room. So many shades of gray in these November skies. As another year decays, to cut you down to size. Heading out of town for a show, down the Vivian Line. In the rear view mirror, leaving all of our tears behind. Well, that's what I had in mind. What I had in mind. Ooh, what I had in mind.
That's a great segue from what we were talking about. I assume this is based on how you feel about your school days.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like a lot of kids, I suppose, I kind of didn't want to be there, you know, and I think they were sort of concerned about me early on because I was, you know, slightly, I think, on the spectrum of things, and, you know, they I was in grade 4 and they put me back into a grade 3 class, but then they put me into a grade 5 creative writing class, which I thought was, pretty smart, because they wanted to see what was going on in my head or whatever. And so that song is just about a kid from St. Catharines with kind of low prospects, and then by the end of the song you feel that it sort of all worked out. And
you have some songs that are about characters that are obviously not you, and then there are more soul bearing songs.
Yeah.
And I wonder, in those sort of songs, when you sort of put your own problems, your worst thoughts sometimes, I think, into a song, is it something that's just sort of necessary for you to sort of process those problems, or is it,
Yeah, I think it is a cathartic thing to, I'm writing all the time. Sometimes a song, even if it's about somebody else, there's a bit of, me in there too, or I'm trying to see it, trying to walk in their shoes or something.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some songs that are more, that are closer to home, like that one and others. And I sang a song last night from my Blue Boy album called Foolproof, and it's a sort of torch song. And I had that song I wrote while watching my son play basketball, and I was trying to think of a song for Dinah Krall, But I can do that too, I can sort of, imagine a situation too. But oftentimes, the older I get, I think more and more my songs become a little more personal.
I think I read somewhere where maybe it's like after every time you write a batch of songs or every time you make a record, you think to yourself, well, perhaps this is it. Perhaps the tank is now officially on empty. I will never write a song again. And then, what happens?
Yeah, I know. That's the case with my new record, because I had made an album in 2020, and I wasn't able to tour it because of the pandemic. And then there was all this talk, even in 2021, that, you might get to do these shows finally. And I hadn't been writing at all, because I was already sort of ahead of the game. I had an album that was out, and I was content. But then, just in the early months of 2021, I had this avalanche of tunes. Just from messing around on the piano, or I'll walk to town and I'll see something, I always get this sort of feeling of dread, like, it's like Charlie Brown trying to kick the football again. I'm going to get my hopes up, but it's also an exciting feeling, because I don't feel useful really if I'm not writing. So, and then before I knew it, I had this whole batch of songs, and then you get excited again, and you figure, well, does the label even want me to make another record? There's all these other factors too. So.
It's funny what a roller coaster ride is, just in your mind. I mean, not even in reality.
It really is. I mean, you start, there's oftentimes you get down and you think, well, what's the point? No one's gonna care or whatever. But some albums, for whatever reason, have a little more kind of wind in their sails, like this one. I feel right out of the gate there's more of a buzz for this one than my last few, and I don't know why that is.
Nobody knows. As I said, the record's called The Vivian Line, and was produced by Brad Jones in Nashville. He's made a lot of interesting records. He's has a great reputation. You just kind of go into his studio and you always come out with a great sounding, interesting, weird, he's great. There's something interesting about everything he does. I read the word a couple times, the phrase Baroque pop. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I sent him the demos, which were just me on the guitar, and I really didn't know what kind of record to make. I mean, the last time I did, I played all the instruments myself. That was sort of my drummer produced it. He wanted me to do like a McCartney type thing. But for these songs, I was really at a loss. And so when Brad got the demo, it was about a week later, he called me back. And that was those were his words. He said, I hear this kind of like Baroque pop, with harpsichords. And I'd made a record like that once in 1999 called Whereabouts that had all that woodwinds and stuff. And I was like, but now I think I can sing better. I mean, not this morning, I can't sing better. But when I made the record, And I felt, I was excited by that, and I could hear it once he said that. And I mean, not all the songs have that on the record, but a great many of them do.
So was the process you and a guitar and a drummer, and then Brad would just attack the songs, basically?
Well, we went down there, and the first 2 days it was just me and Brad, and I played, there was a couple songs that weren't going to have drums on it, like When Our Love Was New, and I just got those out of the way. I sang, that was the very first song I did, and then we had the drummer, Conrad Shakroon from Austin, played with NRBQ.
Yeah, yeah.
He came in, we only had him, I think, for 5 days, maybe even 4 days, and so we had to get all those songs done, and we would just huddle. We'd meet in the room where the coffee was and play the song, and everyone would get their parts, and we'd go out and start playing it. And usually by about, once we knew it, we about two or three takes later, we'd have
it. Was it with Brad on bass and you on guitar?
Yeah, it was all three of us.
So rhythm section.
Yeah, it was just me and a rhythm section.
That's great.
And we did that the first 4 days, was just the three of us. So everything just sounded, I mean, it already sounded like a record to me. It was like guitar, bass, vocals, drums. And, you know, and because we only had them for a few days, we didn't even do any harmonies or anything. Although, actually, I got Conrad on the last day to sing, because he's a really good singer. And I knew just by talking to him that his voice would go well with mine. Mm. So he sang a bunch of songs. And then when he left, then I had a day or two of overdubs, which was really fun, because that's when Brad did his keyboards, and I all the bad keyboards on the album are me, and all the good ones are him. And I got to do harmonies, and then there was another few days when the string player came in and all that. Huh? So it was all done. Less than 3 weeks, we had the whole thing.
That's amazing. Yeah. RonSexsmith.com is the website, and folks can listen to it, order it, etc. It's a really interesting record. You have made over 17 records, a lot of really interesting records, because I think producers must love it when you sort of send over a batch of songs and they kind of, you know, what can I do to kind of bring out what's inside this song? And there's, over your whole catalog, a lot of just really interesting sounds and approaches, and the songs are real malleable. I think it has to be a good song in order to withstand that sort of production, and there's some just amazing stuff. Later in the program, we'll take a tour through your catalog. You said something, or at least I've always told people, you said this when we last spoke in 1996, that you said, when I write a song, I generally write it in my head and don't touch the guitar until I've got it. Is that true?
Yeah, it's not that I have the whole song in my head, but generally if I have a good verse going in my head, and I write, because I was a courier, right, for a long time, and all the songs on my first album and some from my second were written on the job, just from walking along, and when I'm cutting the grass, or because that's when it's like the Winnie the Pooh method, you know, I'm like humming to myself and I'm singing. But then once I have something that is like, yeah, like even a chorus or something, then I'll, whatever instrument's closest, you know, the piano or the guitar, I'll start banging around, and then that's all you get, you know, the initial inspiration, whatever, is usually just this little fragment, but the, you know, just from, I know from experience that it's going to be a song, it's going to be finished, because I've been there so many times, and it just, after that, it's just a matter of returning to it, and you know, until it's finished, and I tend to write in batches too. So while I'm working on that, there's three or four other ones that, and you know, and it's like it's a bit of a puzzle. But you get a little further with each one until one day you wake up and you realize, oh my God, I think these are ready to demo. And I think the producers who I've worked with, I always go in with complete songs. You know, I can't imagine going in the studio and actually writing in the studio.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people do that, but. So I think I'd like to think I make the job easy for the producer, because all they got to figure out is what the groove's going to be and what, you know, the wallpaper's going
to
be.
Yeah, the voice and the guitar are there. You just need to embellish a little bit and voila, yeah.
And some producers like Mitchell Froom, we'd have these two-week pre-production sessions where he was great, because he would say, can we get to the bridge faster? Can we modulate it? Like, he would have all these producer ideas that hadn't occurred to me. Now they occurred to me. At the time, they didn't.
Mm. So. Would you play us another song?
Sure.
What do you got?
Well, we were talking about When Our Love Was New, or I was anyway, so I'll play that one. When when our love was new, as new as the morning. It sparkled like the dew of the new day dawning. Little did we know, we were old souls from the start. For though our love was new, it was ancient in our hearts. When our love was born and a new life was beginning, our kisses, they were warm. Our eyes, how they'd glisten. Nothing much to say. It was always meant to be. Though our love was newly born, other lifetimes had it seen. Spirits swirl around and twirl around until they find a home. I turned around, you turned around until the time had flown. When our love was young, as young as the springtime, we were always on the run. Now it slows to a sweet time. Little did we know, we were old souls from the start. Although our love was young, it was ancient in our heart. For though our love was new, it was ancient in our heart.
There's Ron Sexsmith right here live in studio. It's nice to have a real person. There were so many years where no real people were around. Did you? You've been doing this for so long. Like we said, 17 albums. Did you enjoy on some level the peace and quiet of COVID, or did you? Did you want to go outside?
You know, it was obviously a strange time, but. And again, it was that useless feeling because, you know, the one thing I'm supposed to be good at, I wasn't able to do. Hmm. And it was hard, you know, because you couldn't really be with your loved ones. But where we live, it's kind of a small town. And COVID actually was rather bearable because, you know, I could walk around the river. I could get out. We had friends, you know, that they said you could bubble with friends. There was like a, yeah. At the time, it was like five, which was pretty much our entire social network in Stratford. So we just really were there for each other, and we kept having these, you know, these parties and get-togethers and when we were allowed to, you know. And even during COVID, I had a residency at a church where I play twice a month for, we were allowed 50 people inside. And that did wonders for my I just felt like I gave something to look forward to, and the people could go out and have a normal night and have dinner and then go to a show. So when it all ended and I had to get back on the road again, it was kind of like stressful because I really became a homebody.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to go anywhere anymore. And all of a sudden I'm on airplanes again. I'm a nervous flyer. So, but anyway, I'm really glad that life is coming back to life, and
I think a lot of people still haven't gotten their mojo back. Tonight in Philadelphia at World Cafe Live, and you are on a really huge tour here, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Michigan, Minnesota, because we got people listening everywhere, Colorado, yeah. Idaho, California, Oregon, Arizona, Washington, and then I think to Ireland. I've missed a few, but go to ronsexsmith.com and see if he's coming near you. Do you enjoy... Because you've opened, you've been lucky enough or you know, in the right place at the right time to be opening act for some amazing musicians over the years.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain challenge that goes with that and a certain opportunity.
Or
playing in a slightly smaller room with people who all love you and know every word to every song. Do you like both?
I prefer to headline, you know, because I did that for so long, opening for people.
Yeah.
And it was good and bad, you know. I mean, you know, Elvis Costello, obviously that was a good tour for me because he had said nice things and people were aware of that. I've done some tours where it just wasn't a good fit, you know, where you feel kind of like, even if the act you're opening for is really nice or whatever, the audience sometimes doesn't care, you know. I remember opening for Coldplay and I love Coldplay and they were really nice to me, but sometimes the audience, they don't want you. And so so after a certain point I said, I just think I'd rather play a small venue where people are there to see me. And I'll only do it now if it's someone I really admire, like Nick Lowe or, you know, even Steve Earle and I were talking yesterday, yeah, we should do some shows. I would play for Elvis anytime. There are some people I would do it for.
Yeah, I just saw Nick Lowe in London. November.
London, England.
Yeah.
Where was he playing?
He was playing at Nell's. He had, I think, 4 sold out nights or 6 sold out nights or 9. So I don't know. It was amazing. You know? But he's always amazing, isn't he? God, there's a song I was going to play today, God Loves Everyone. I was kind of picking through your whole catalog for some songs to play, and I couldn't play that one. I was just like, my heart will break on the air live and stuff. You know, money, politics, religion, these are things that are hard to touch with songs. Just curious, like, did that song move people like as much as it does me? And do you ever play it live? And can you get through it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard. When I first wrote it, I wrote it about the whole Matthew Shepard thing. And it wasn't even so much that the murder, but it was the response. When, you know, I remember it was the first time I was aware of this Westboro Baptist Church thing. And that was so offensive to me, you know, that people would be picketing this kid's funeral. And so I wrote the song in this one unedited kind of thing one day, and I wasn't sure if I could sing it, but I came up with the music. And I remember on that particular album I was coming down to tour America, and there were certain places even some journalists would say, I don't know if you should sing that song here. And I remember some woman came to a show in Chicago and wanted to pray for me because she thought I was going to hell for writing it. And I just thought it was so unusual that here's a song about unconditional love for everyone, and people would be offended by that. And
yeah, the idea that God loves everyone is a bad idea.
Yeah.
That encapsulates everything that's
And I didn't mean it to be offensive. I wanted it to be kind of hopeful. But I do play it. I do play it. Not all the time. On the last tour, it got requested, and yeah, I mean, it's a hard song sometimes to get through, but there are other songs, even Strawberry Blonde. Sometimes when I'm singing that, I get choked up or whatever. But
that's my wife's favorite. Can you play us a cover song? Because we're talking about how you could play 4 hours of covers. People love, to hear that.
Well, but you know, one of my heroes, Burt Bacharach, just died, and I could do one of his if you like.
Sure, lovely.
What do you get when you fall in love? A girl with the pins who burst your bubble. That's what you get for all your trouble. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. Tell me now, what do you get when you kiss a girl? You get enough germs to catch pneumonia. After you do, she'll never phone you. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. Don't tell me what it's all about. I've been in and I'm glad I'm out. Out of those chains that bind you. And that is why here to remind you. What do you get when you fall in love? Only get lies and pain and sorrow. So for at least until tomorrow, I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. I'm out of those chains that bind you, and that is why here to remind you, what do you get when you fall in love? You only get lies and pain and sorrow. So for at least until tomorrow, I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again.
That's great. You know, that's what we were talking about before, how a good song at its bones, you can just kind of play any old way and it works, you know?
Yeah, and I guess I'm a bit of a purist that way, you know. I like to be able to strip it down. But obviously there are great songs that are great because the recording is great, too.
Sure.
You know, like Start Me Up is not something you maybe want to play.
There's Sugar Sugar by the Archies.
Yeah. You know, so there are examples, and obviously a lot of R&B stuff, too. Maybe it's not something, but I do love that feeling of structure and melody and everything. And you can, you know, and you can do that even with weirder songs. You could probably do a jazz version of Kung Fu Fighting or something like that. You know, I don't know. But you can break any song almost down to its core, you know.
I would love that. I know you've got to hit the road pretty soon. I'm going to let you go soon. I'm warning you. No. Just tell me about the difference between, if you can, in one, two sentences, the difference between Canadian people, American people, or Canada and America.
Well, I think Canada, and it's almost a cliche, you know, they're always saying how we're more polite or something, or reserved, I don't know. And there's certainly a lot of polite people in America. I think Americans tend to be a little more outgoing. Hmm. Like, they'll say hi to you on the street if they don't know you or whatever. And Canadians, you know, I feel they're always, you know, because you know, America is very kind of a proud country, you know. And Canadians are proud, but they feel a little bit awkward about expressing it, you know. It's like, well, it's more of this kind of, you know, not half-hearted, but it just feels like, you know, like Lenny Kravitz could walk in a room wearing sunglasses, even though he's inside. A Canadian rock star wouldn't necessarily do that. They would feel like, oh, if I do that, everyone's going to think I'm a jerk or something like that.
So a little more humility.
Humility, perhaps, yeah. And
Have you crossed paths with Gordon Lightfoot? And you must have somehow.
Yeah, he's a huge, huge hero of mine. And in fact, I haven't missed the show. I mean, he plays Massey Hall every year, and I'm there every year. Actually, you mentioned Sugar Sugar. I go. My date is Andy Kim.
Oh,
the two of us, we go together. Because I used to go with people, and they would get bored and leave at intermission or something. Because, I mean, you know, he's an older guy now, and he struggles a bit. He's got some breathing issues and that. But I loved being in the room with the guy that wrote all those amazing songs. And I've met him on occasion. At some banquet, we were at the same table once. And he actually came to my very first show at Massey Hall, which was a huge honor. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a treasure. Yeah, he really is. And he's still doing it.
He wants to play until he drops, you know, which I get that. I want to do it, too. So.
I hear you. All right, can I ask you to do One Bird Calling?
Oh, I'll do that one.
Would you? That's my favorite on the new record. It's called The Vivian Lyne, Ron Sexsmith. He's tonight in Philadelphia.
And my apologies, but I just woke up, so my voice is a little bit scratchy. So I'll be singing better tonight in Philly, folks. All right. After the storm, she heard one bird calling, calling for its love, I guess. Amid the torrent of branches falling, many a bird had lost its nest. This summer storm, it came without warning, leaving damage in its way. With the dawn came the gentle morning to weave its grace, for heaven's sake. All the blessings I feel right now, oh, how lucky we are to have a home, to have a home. Blessings I feel right now, oh, how lucky we are to have a home. When one is gone, there'll be one bird calling, calling for its love somewhere. With its song, many tears are falling for the ones no longer there. For the one no longer there.
Ooh. I just put my finger on it. The songs, whenever any song by you sounds like a Ron Sexsmith song, yet it's also just a classic song. Like, to be able to do that thing that everyone can relate to the songs, yet they are so personal to you, that's a unique trick. So,
well, I guess for me, too, there's something when I'm writing a song, if it feels like it's already been written, I think that's a good sign. You know, not that I'm stealing somebody's song, but if it feels like it's all, I don't know, like it's meant to be, or it came my way, and this is, you know. And you get these little clues along the way. And so that song, like, I had the melody before I had the lyrics. And I didn't know what, and my wife just happened to tell me she heard this bird calling that looked like it was looking for its family. And then, you know, the light bulb comes on. And about, you know, 45 minutes later, I had the tune.
So. Yeah, amazing. Well, this has been great. We should do this more often than every 27 years or
yeah, I would love to yeah,
next time with the band maybe. I've got the new record here, the Vivian Lyne. What song should I play for everyone? Do you have one that we haven't played so far that you're into?
Well, you know, the last song on the record was called Ever Wonder, which I wrote it like it was supposed to be like a Beach Boy thing, but when I got in the studio with Brad, it turned into more of a Roger Miller thing, you know, the clicks and the upright bass. And so it was kind of a nice surprise. And I got to do these sort of cool Jordanaire type harmonies. That's all me, but Brad helped me find the right notes. And anyway, so maybe that one.
That's a perfect one. Okay. Ron Sexsmith is tonight in Philadelphia at the World Cafe Live. It's only 90 miles away from here, and then really all over the South and the Midwest and then the West Coast. So check ronsexsmith.com for information. See if he's coming near you and pick up a copy of new album, 17th album called The Vivian Lyne. Thanks, Ron. Let's hear Ever Wonder.
Thanks, Michael.
You're my pleasure.
Ever wonder why our plans fall asunder? Why things always get off track? Whenever the doubt comes, could that lead to the outcome? Ever wonder about that? Do you ever wonder why our hand was asunder? There's always so much to unpack. And where the light goes, guess that only the night knows. Ever wonder about that? We're not so different in the smaller grand scheme. Not so different when we wonder what
Song into this world, just a melody with words. It trembles here before my eyes. How can this song survive? I brought it to the Tower of Gold. Song survive. Oh, now I can't help wondering how it is, how someone like you exists, when all around you bullets fly. You don't seem to notice them go by. How can the song survive? Never leave this song alone. I'm gonna keep it safe and warm. The hate is strong and darkness thrives. How can this song song you ever heard? How many more have died of birth? Oh, how can this song survive? I brought a song into this world, just a melody with words. Trembles here before my eyes. How can this song survive? Oh, I came on with all God nights. How can this song survive? Until we finally say goodbye. song.